wishing you a great weekend ahead, Africa.
This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The U.S. Senate ships a $40 billion Ukraine bill to President Joe Biden for his signature. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
The Senate gave final approval Thursday to a fresh $40 billion aid package for Ukraine, sending the bill to President Joe Biden for his signature. The legislation that includes military, economic, and food aid for Ukraine and U.S. allies passed on a vote of 86 to 11. Both party leaders, Democrat Chuck Schumer and Republican Mitch McConnell, urged passage.
It's a fight we should not and cannot turn away from.
I encourage every senator on both sides to join this bipartisan supermajority.
Every Democrat who voted approved the measure, as did most Republicans. But all the no votes came from Republicans, which was also the case last week when the House approved the legislation 368 to 57. Mike Gracia, Washington.
President Biden on Thursday enthusiastically welcomed Sweden's and Finland's bid to join NATO's security alliance, moves that would enlarge the bloc to include two of Europe's most modern militaries and place it along Russia's northwestern border. Speaking from the White House Rose Garden, along with Sweden's prime minister and Finland's president, Biden said he would send their membership applications to the U.S. Congress, where he hopes for a swift approval. The 29 other NATO members will have to agree by consensus to admit the two nations, a process that normally takes up to a year, but is expected to be faster in this case. Only NATO ally Turkey has expressed reservation about the Baltic neighbors joining the alliance, with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan accusing them of giving a haven to terrorists and imposing sanctions on Turkey. For more news, voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. Lawmakers in the U.S. state of Oklahoma approved the bill prohibiting all abortions with few exceptions. We get more on the story from the AP's Ed Donahue.
Abortions would be banned in Oklahoma except to save the life of a pregnant woman or if the pregnancy is the result of rape or incest that has been reported to law enforcement. Governor Kevin Stitt had earlier signed a bill that bans abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Two of Oklahoma's four abortion clinics already stopped providing abortions, and an attorney for the two other independent clinics said they will no longer offer services once this new bill is signed. The Oklahoma bill comes following a leaked draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court, suggesting justices may weaken or overturn Roe v. Wade that legalized abortion nearly 50 years ago. I'm Ed Donahue.
U.S. health advisors are urging a booster dose of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention quickly signed off on the advice. The decision opens a third COVID-19 shot to healthy elementary age kids, just like what already is recommended for everyone, or everybody that is, 12 and older. Regulators this week authorized the extra dose to be given at least 5 months after youngsters' last shot. CDC's advisors endorsed it during a public meeting on Thursday. North Korean propaganda describes an all-out effort to fight a suspected COVID-19 outbreak that has sickened nearly 2 million people. But defectors say fear is palatable among North Korean citizens who lack access to hospital care and struggle to afford even basic medicine. North Korea's main action appears to be isolating suspected patients. That's because it lacks vaccine, intensive care units, and other medical assets that ensured millions of sick people, in other countries survived. Some experts say the outbreak could cause dire consequences if North Korea doesn't accept international help. They also worry the true scale of the outbreak is being concealed, and some say the country's pandemic response will become a propaganda tool to boost leader Kim Jong-un's image. Twitter is stepping up its fight against misinformation with a new policy cracking down on posts that spread potentially dangerous false stories. The change is part of a broader effort to promote accurate information during times of conflict or crisis. Under the new rules, which take effect Thursday, Twitter will no longer automatically recommend or amplify posts that mischaracterize conditions during a conflict. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Today is Friday, May 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken accuses Russia of using food as a weapon in Ukraine.
The Russian government seems to believe that using food as a weapon will help accomplish what its invasion is not, to break the spirit of the Ukrainian people. Still, Ukrainians are going to great lengths to feed their own people and to feed the world.
Ethiopia's conflict-ridden Tigray region receives the biggest aid convoy since they declared truce with Addis Ababa in March.
15,000 tons of food and other life-saving supplies have made it to Ethiopia's Tigray region as of this week, and more is on the way, according to the UN World Food Programme.
And China emerges as a key campaign issue in Australia's general election on May 21st. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken accused Russia on Thursday of using food as a weapon in Ukraine by holding, quote, hostage, unquote, the food supply of not just millions of Ukrainians, but also millions around the world who rely on Ukrainian exports. Addressing the United Nations Security Council, Blinken appealed to Russia to stop blockading Ukrainian ports. The war in Ukraine has caused global prices for grains, cooking oils, fuel and fertilizer to soar. Russia's UN Ambassador Vasily Nabenzia said it was, quote, absolutely false, unquote, that Russia was to blame for a global food crisis that had been brewing for several years. He accused Ukraine of holding foreign vessels in its ports and mining the waters, and said the Russian military had repeatedly tried to open safe corridors for vessels. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken.
The decision to wage this war is the Kremlin's and the Kremlin's alone. If Russia stopped fighting tomorrow, the war would end. If Ukraine stopped fighting, there would be no more Ukraine. The consequences of these actions have been devastating. The food supply for millions of Ukrainians and millions more around the world has quite literally been held hostage by the Russian military. The Russian government seems to believe that using food as a weapon will help accomplish what its invasion is not, to break the spirit of the Ukrainian people. Still, Ukrainians are going to great lengths to feed their own people and to feed the world. Farmers in Ukraine continue to risk their lives to produce wheat and other crops. Many have returned to fields that are filled with mines. They wear bulletproof vests and helmets as they harvest. And it's not only Ukrainians who are suffering. As a result of the Russian government's actions, some 20 million tons of grain sit unused in Ukrainian silos as global food supplies dwindle, prices skyrocket, causing more around the world to experience food insecurity. The Russian Federation claims falsely that the international community's sanctions are to blame for worsening the global food crisis. Sanctions aren't blocking Black Sea ports, trapping ships filled with food, and destroying Ukrainian roads and railways. Sanctions are not emptying Ukrainian grain silos and stealing Ukrainian farm equipment. Sanctions aren't preventing Russia from exporting food and fertilizer. Sanctions imposed by the United States and many other countries deliberately include carve-outs for food, fertilizer, and seeds from Russia. And we're working with countries every day to ensure that they understand that sanctions do not prevent the flow of these items.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. Finnish President Sauli Niinistö on Thursday vowed to commit to Turkey's security when and if his country becomes a NATO member, and said Finland was open to discussing Ankara's concerns over its membership bid. He spoke at the White House, where President Joe Biden hosted the leaders of Finland and Sweden following their formal application for NATO membership. Niinistö said his country was ready in discussions to address Turkey's concerns and that those conversations will continue in the coming days.
Turkey's leadership has recently expressed concerns about our membership application. Finland has always had broad and good bilateral relations to Turkey. As NATO allies, we will commit to Turkey's security just as Turkey will commit to our security. We take terrorism seriously. We condemn terrorism in all its forms, and we are actively engaged in combating it. We are open to discussing all the concerns Turkey may have concerning our membership in an open and constructive manner. These discussions have already taken place, and they will continue in the next days.
That's Finnish President Sauli Niinistö. Turkey surprised NATO allies last week by objecting to the move accusing the two countries of harboring Kurdish militants. Washington has so far played down the Turkish objections, saying it expects the issues to be resolved. Amid a severe clampdown on political opposition and civil society in Russia following its invasion of Ukraine, thousands of people have fled the country, including many artists whose work is often critical of President Vladimir Putin. Some of those artists are now in Finland, as Henry Ridgewell reports from Helsinki.
Theatre director Mikhail Dernenkov and actor Alexei Yudnikov are both long-standing enemies of the Kremlin. For decades, their performances parodied the Russian government and its leader, Vladimir Putin, testing the boundaries of expressive freedom under constant state surveillance. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, both men fled the country and have found temporary shelter at a haven run by the organization Artists at Risk in Helsinki, Finland. Dernenkov told VOA, "We left the country simply so as not to be on the side that is waging war, so as not to cast our votes in this way. If I'm here in Finland, that means I can speak, I must speak, and I must help the protest voices from Russia to be heard, because in Russia it is impossible." Anti-war protests in Russia have been brutally suppressed. A new law imposes jail terms of up to 15 years for spreading what the Kremlin calls fake news about the invasion. Dernenkov says the space for freedom of expression has all but disappeared. There is an unspoken law that exists now in Russian society, he says, whereby if you are a country at war and if you say something against it, you are selling out your country at the front line. And this will be punished instantly, severely, that very second. Ukrainian-born actor Alexei Yudnikov also fled Moscow following the invasion, leaving behind his family. I feel pain and personal guilt, he said. What could I alone change? I couldn't find any better option than just leaving. It was spontaneous, an instinctive gesture to leave, but also to try again here in Finland, simply because here, outside of Russia, you can tell the truth. Yudnikov staged a protest outside the Russian pavilion at the recent Venice Biennale art festival in Italy. He says the invasion of Ukraine has unleashed a parallel war within Russia. The henchmen of this regime are trying to impose absolutely shamelessly this formula that Putin is Russia and that these things do not exist without each other. This is a war between reality and escape. A total escape from this reality. If you like, it is a war between something real and something fake. Dernenkov and Yudnikov are among the artists who have fled Russia since the invasion to preserve their freedom, but also to continue voicing their opposition. They don't know if or when they will return home. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Helsinki.
The largest aid convoy to reach Ethiopia's conflict-ridden Tigray region since the declaration of a truce in March arrived this week, while the effort marked progress for aid organizations scrambling to respond to the region's humanitarian crisis. Resources are spread thin, as neighboring regions also require aid due to the conflict and severe drought. Linda Giftash reports from Samira, Ethiopia.
15,000 tons of food and other life-saving supplies have made it to Ethiopia's Tigray region as of this week, and more is on the way, according to the UN World Food Programme. Although critical supplies were still getting in via air, the region was cut off by road from humanitarian assistance for more than 3 months because of the war between Ethiopia's federal government and the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front. The conflict has left 4.8 million people facing hunger, the UN says. Adrian van der Knaap is the World Food Programme's Ethiopia Deputy Director.
We hope at the end of this month, because the momentum is really picking up now, we hope to be able to dump 30,000 metric tons of food and food commodities into Tigray in 2 weeks' time. Our plan is by the end of June to have 100,000 tons of food.
The humanitarian corridor between the capital of the Afar region, Samarra, and Tigray's capital of Mekele was established at the beginning of April. It's currently the only road open to Tigray. Many of Afar's central and northern towns were attacked by the TPLF, say the people displaced by the conflict. The attacks have displaced more than half of the region's 2 million people. The TPLF said in an April statement that its presence in Afar was meant to neutralize security threats. In January, it said Afar forces had also launched incursions into Tigray and were blocking humanitarian aid from entering the region. Afar's head of disaster prevention, Mohamed Hussein, says Afar holds no ill will toward Tigrayan civilians.
This is a very unique humanity because of they are sending troops to kill us here, but we are sending food them to eat there. The war already launched by the TPLF and the TDF, and the invasion is happened by this agent, but we are not a critical problem with the Tigrayan people.
The current cooperation has been critical to addressing rising malnutrition in Tigray, where more than 80% of households faced food insecurity last December. The TPLF said in February that without access to treatment, 23,000 children with severe malnutrition were at risk of death. But government agencies and aid organizations say they are being stretched thin, juggling crises in neighboring regions, including Afar. Syed Mohammed is the Afar field office manager for Save the Children.
There is a double burden on the community. The first one is the current conflict, which distracted many water facilities as well as other basic facilities. On top of this, drought is also another challenge even for Afar. For the last many years, Afar is within the drought, we can say. So the drought is also another challenge even for the community.
Other crises globally, such as the war in Ukraine, are stretching donor resources. The WFP's Van der Knaap says it's facing a $522 million shortfall for its supplies in Ethiopia in the next 6 months, $220 million of which affects the northern regions, including Tigray.
But we're running out of resources very fast. So our nightmare is that we have created that positive environment. We're using those corridors that are open, but we have to stop. So everything goes back to where it was before April.
Aid workers say they are not slowing down. An even larger convoy than the one that arrived Monday is already on the road to Tigray, the WFP said, with many more reaching other communities in the country to curtail the growing hunger. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Samara, Ethiopia.
In other news, the health authority in Portugal, the country with the most monkeypox cases, said on Thursday it was worried about the spread of the disease, but asked people to stay calm as the transmission risk was low. Portugal has reported 14 cases of monkeypox, and there are around 20 suspected infections. The spokesperson for the country's monkeypox working group, Margarita Tavares, told Reuters in a video interview. There are two main strains, the Congo strain, which is more severe with up to 10% mortality, and the West African strain, which has a fatality rate of about 1%. Portugal's cases are of the West African strain, according to Tavares. The outbreaks in Britain, Portugal, Spain, and the United States and other countries raised alarm because the disease, which spreads through close contact and was first found in monkeys, occurs mostly in West and Central Africa and only very occasionally elsewhere. The Portuguese Health Authority has asked those with symptoms to refrain from direct physical contact with others. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Relations with China are a key campaign issue as Australians prepare to vote in a general election on May 21st. Both major parties have accused each other of inaction or connivance in their approach to diplomacy with China, which is Australia's biggest trading partner. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
China recently signed a controversial security pact with Solomon Islands, one of Australia's traditional allies in the Pacific Ocean. That move prompted fears of Chinese expansion in the region, as well as recriminations. Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who's seeking re-election on May 21, was accused by opposition politicians of doing too little to prevent a strategic neighbour aligning with China. Officials in Solomon Islands, an archipelago northeast of Australia, say there are no plans to allow China to set up a permanent military base, despite concerns by politicians in Canberra and Washington. Morrison says he's worked hard with Australia's allies to bring stability to the region.
I mean, it's 80 years ago right now since Australia and the United States were battling in the Coral Sea. And we're here again right now working together with our partners, with New Zealand, with the other many Pacific nations to ensure that we can secure peace and stability within the Pacific.
Morrison said China was seeking to interfere in the Pacific. He's responded to criticism of his handling of China's ambitions in the Pacific by accusing Anthony Albanese, his Labour Party rival in Saturday's election, of being too sympathetic to Beijing. Albanese rejected what he called an outrageous slur.
The Chinese Communist Party has changed. It's more forward-leaning, it's more aggressive, and that means that Australia, of course, must respond.
Albanese has outlined his foreign policy priorities should he win Saturday's election. He said he'd attend next week's scheduled meeting of the Quad Partnership with India, Japan and the United States. Australia's relationship with China has deteriorated in recent years over various geopolitical and trade disputes. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
People suffering from eco-anxiety, the fear of environmental catastrophe, may get a boost from a Green Forum in Paris this week, gathering hundreds of eco-entrepreneurs, companies and activists. Change Now aims to trace a sustainable blueprint for the future. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA.
From food to fashion, technology to transport, a raft of green solutions for our resource-sucking society is parked through Saturday inside a massive events venue made of sustainable materials in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower.
So here it's 35 days to reach Madagascar from Marseille, going through Suez Canal. And we are using the wind. It helps us to save up to 60% energy.
Louise Chopinet heads a Brittany-based shipping startup called Wind Co-op. Its wind-powered sailing vessels carry about 14,000 tons of cargo per trip. For now, that means spices from Madagascar's farmers. With the shipping industry challenged to become carbon neutral by 2050, sailing is taking off.
It's really a growing interest now. So everyone is getting into sails and wings.
Berlin-based NOAA Climate also works in Africa. It sells systems that recycle organic waste into energy in places far from power grids. NOAA's Janine Gatke says the company works with financial partners so poor communities can buy products on credit.
For example, in Kenya, we have a project in an orphanage. So they have the system on the location. They can get electricity and everything, and they feed the system with the kitchen waste.
Change Now is considered one of the biggest global green events of the year. This fifth edition includes CEOs and celebrity activists like British primatologist Jane Goodall. Being Paris, representatives of a greening fashion industry are also here, like luxury group LVMH. Also companies pitching natural textiles like silk, cotton, hemp, and mohair.
We can feel a boom in terms of demand.
Eva Pujol works for British textile nonprofit The Sustainable Angle.
More and more people are coming, and we have brands asking more and more about sustainable materials. I think the pressure comes mostly from customers wanting to buy better.
The forum offers a bicycle parking lot, recyclable waste containers, and a stand cooking up veggie burgers. Those who couldn't find climate-friendly transport to get here can make a contribution to offset their carbon emissions. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers from the University of Florida say that for the first time in human history, they have grown plants in soil from the moon, called lunar regolith. In a university press release, the scientists see their work as a breakthrough in the exploration of the moon and space. They say their efforts provide a crucial first step that will eventually allow future moon missions to grow their own plants for food and oxygen. In a study published by Communications Biology, researchers demonstrate that plants can spring to life and grow in the lunar regolith. The study also explains how the plants biologically react to the lunar soil. For their experiments, the scientists used only 12 grams of moon soil that was collected by the Apollo 11, 12, and 17 moon missions. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. How do Voice of America's fellow U.S.-funded broadcasters combat expanded disinformation and propaganda efforts by Moscow and Beijing? We talk with the CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and president of Radio Free Asia about how these organizations are reaching vast audiences as they circumvent efforts by autocratic governments to block the dissemination of unbiased news and information. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
To all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
An Istanbul court sentenced Turkish civil rights activist and philanthropist Osman Kavala to life in prison for allegedly attempting to overthrow the government. Kavala was first arrested in 2017 on charges related to the 2013 Gezi Park protests in Istanbul. The demonstrations grew into a nationwide year-long movement against then-Prime Minister Recep Erdogan's increasingly authoritarian rule. A court later acquitted Kavala of the Gezi Park charges and ordered Kavala released. He was immediately rearrested on charges of taking part in a 2016 coup attempt against President Erdogan, which resulted in the death of at least 250 people and the eventual detention of over 110,000 people, including civil servants, teachers, activists, and journalists. In addition to Kavala, the Turkish court sentenced seven other defendants to 18-year prison sentences for aiding the attempted overthrow of the Erdogan government. Among them was 71-year-old architect Mujalla Yepici, Istanbul municipality urban planner Tayfun Kahraman, and documentary filmmaker Çiğdem Mater. The United States is deeply troubled and disappointed by the court's decision to convict Osman Kavala, among others. His unjust conviction is inconsistent with respect for human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the rule of law, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement. We again call on Turkey to release Osman Kavala in keeping with European Court of Human Rights rulings, as well as to free all others arbitrarily incarcerated. The United States remains gravely concerned by the continued judicial harassment of civil society, media, political, and business leaders in Turkey, including through prolonged pretrial detention, overly broad claims of support for terrorism, and criminal insult cases. The people of Turkey deserve to exercise their human rights and fundamental freedoms without fear of retribution, declared spokesperson Price. The right to exercise freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association is enshrined in Turkey's constitution and its international law obligations and Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe commitments. We urge the government to cease politically motivated prosecutions and to respect the rights and freedoms of all Turkish citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.